WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Low Tide here on 90.7 The Capstone. We got the new intro music, the new vibes, you know, hopefully trying to offset my sickness from just a rough week. And it's not going to get any better. We've got to travel to College Station this coming weekend, but that's neither here nor there. We'll get to that in the next segment. Like I said, welcome to Low Tide. Nicholas Pursley, Joe Schatz, Adam Hambright hanging out with you tonight. How are we doing, gents?
I'm a little tired, but I'm pretty good otherwise. I mean, we had a fairly decent weekend sports-wise around here. I was doing a lot of driving yesterday. I assume you were too, Nick, since you were actually there covering the game. But, you know, ready to get started.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out whether I dislike the 8 p.m. kickoff or the 2:30 kickoff more. Because undisputably for me, 11 a.m. is the worst for football games.
100%.
But like 2:30 is kind of bad because it's just so hot. But 8 p.m. really, like watching the game, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like 11:30.
Yeah, yeah. I really like those 6 p.m. kicks because, you know, the sun's not quite down yet, but, you know, you're still getting that night game atmosphere. You had time in the morning to do stuff. And then if you're actually traveling to the game, you have a little bit more time to make it home. So 8 p.m. is a little rough, but, you know, it was worth it.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of tough when you're looking for the Pac-12 after dark game and then you realize Alabama is the quote-unquote Pac-12 after dark game.
Yeah. But with conference realignment, it might not be too far off.
Well, I mean, Pac-2 is coming.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to keep – what I think they're going to – they want to go to 5-7, 5 conference champions instead of the 6. I mean, truly tough scene for the Pac-2.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But what a – do we remember, I think, so Alabama plays Oklahoma next year. Is that in Tuscaloosa or Norman?
I don't know.
You want to look that up?
Yeah, we need to figure that out because if I'm making the drive from Norman, that's going to be a little rougher than, you know, Starkville.
So. Oh, yeah, for sure. Anyway, speaking of Starkville, crazy environment. I mean, this is my first time going. I was not prepared for how loud it was going to be in there, truly, and you know, I've been to a Cowboys playoff game in Jerry World. Very, very loud, but not nearly as loud as, yeah, I don't even know how many people Davis Wade
holds. I believe it's like 60,000. Let me pull it up.
You know,
it was a
conservative 60. Estimate.
60? Okay, so, according to the 61,337, so, you know, 40,000 less than Bryant Denny.
Yeah, I mean, but even then,
cowbells.
Like 50,000 cowbells ringing. It's unbelievably loud. Like, like leading up to the game, and I'm glad I had taken my AirPods, right, with the noise canceling, because truly, if I hadn't, I might not be able to hear anything. I do not know how Mississippi State graduates hear after doing an entire season of that, legitimately.
Yeah, it's actually, like, I actually think it's pretty cool that they do it, but, yeah, it's real annoying a lot. Most of the time I find it really annoying just because it's just the same repetitive noise.
But. So that was my second time in Starkville for like a football game there, and you know, it's one of my favorite atmospheres that I've been to. And you know, me, I wasn't up there with you up in the upper sections, you know, press area. But for me, I was down pretty close to the field. Luckily, I wasn't right next to the student section. But you know, it got pretty loud. You know, they're supposed to stop. I believe you made a post that they're supposed to stop like once the center's over the ball. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it doesn't. But You know,
I will say about that, I was pretty impressed, and I want to give credit where it's due to, I believe it was a Sports Illustrated article from the Georgia Sports Illustrated affiliate, but they had talked about how the only reason why they're allowed to have the cowbells, besides the tradition and all that, they're like the only school in the SEC where an exception was made, and one of the only in like all of college football, I think. But the reason why they're allowed to is because they're supposed to stop after the offensive center, like, takes his stance over the ball. And honestly, it's pretty good. Like, they do a pretty good job of it. It doesn't completely stop, but, like, the noise, it's pretty impressive, honestly.
And, I mean, really, like, what you're trying to do right there. Like, if you're being loud the whole time up there, they've already got the play call in. If you've messed up, like, one guy actually hearing the play, you know, that's good. I actually enjoy the cowbells. I mean, I haven't been to a game against Mississippi State where Alabama has lost, so if that had happened, maybe I wouldn't be as, you know, comfortable with it, but I enjoy it. That was Jasmine, my wife. That was her first time there. So I actually bought her earplugs. I was like, I'm going to get these for you just because you're not used to it, but I enjoy it. So
no, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, it was great. And I will say, Davis Wade, a vibe for sure. That pregame playlist, I don't know who was cooking, but like, get cooking. Them back in the kitchen. Like, that is crazy good. Like, we need that in Bryant Denny. I don't know how we've gone so long, because that the pregame playlist in Bryant Denny and just even the playlist through the game, not it. Mm. But in Davis Wade, I will give them credit. They know how to party. I'll give them that.
Stark Vegas. Yeah.
It was very fun. And the like the paratroopers coming in with the flag, that was sick. So yeah, a great vibe overall.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Like, it seems like a really cool place to watch a game. I've never been there to watch a game, but it's definitely like on like the bucket list as far as, you know, if I'm able to get there, I got, you know, figuring I gotta go, because not only do those cowbells are very unique, but
so
it's just...
So you should go there when they're not playing Alabama, so you can actually like get a cowbell and join in on the fight.
I should.
Yeah, true.
I think that's the goal, because, I mean, especially, like you said, Adam, like, if Alabama loses that game, like, the cowbells in the fourth quarter probably are terrible. Like, that's probably the worst sound you could ever hear.
Luckily, you know, the two ones that I've been to, we've won by over 20 both times.
So. There's been, what, like 14 straight ones or 15?
16 now. 16. But, you know, that I wrote about it in the article, you know, preview, like going through the history and stuff. And
gameday.ua.edu.
Yeah. That, you know, it was 2017, and you know it's a tie game with 20 something seconds left, so you know that place is still packed. I can't imagine like how loud it would have been, like, actually being there. But Alabama came out with a win, 16 game winning streak now, so yeah, good times. Yeah.
Can't ask for much more. Anyway, let's actually talk about the game. I do believe it was well worth the travel, even though I got in at, I think I said, 1:55 a.m. in the morning.
So just in time to go out, go to the bars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Straight from the drive out there on the strip. But Alabama wins 40-17 at Mississippi State. Their 16th straight win, as we said. A very interesting game plan from Alabama, kind of even more to the extreme of what they were doing against Ole Miss. Jalen Milroe didn't have a pass attempt in the first quarter. I can't think of the last time I saw that in an Alabama game.
Yeah, he doesn't have a pass attempt the whole first quarter. He ends up, you know, only 12 attempts, you know, 10 completions out of 12 attempts, you know, very efficient game. He did not have a passing touchdown, but he did exactly what he was needed to do. And what I enjoyed about the offensive performance in this game was, you know, this seemed like, you know, coming off of the second half against Ole Miss and kind of carried into this game, they're doing, you know, more to the effect of, like, let's just focus on what players we have on the field and what do we need to run. And it's like, you know, quarterback runs, or, you know, they were trying to get the ball out of – on the pass attempts, they were trying to get the ball out of the hands quicker, and then a lot more running the ball, you know, with an offensive line that's – I can't remember the average of it, but, you know, bigger than most NFL lines. That's what everybody's been talking about. And we've seen their struggles in the passing game. Well, that's because they're not built to pass protect very long, you know, run downhill at them, and you see what happens. We ended up with – 193 rushing yards in total, and nobody had over 100. 69 from Milroe, 63 from McClellan, 44 from Roydell Williams. You know, just a very solid game. I do wish they were able to get in the end zone a couple times in the second half, because then it wouldn't have been as close. But 40-17, good first road SEC win.
Yeah, I also I was really, to be honest, I was pretty impressed just with how the second half, you talked a lot about the offense game plan and stuff, but I was a little impressed with how the defense, kind of after that first drive in the third quarter, where it was still, you know, sort of a game. You know, Mississippi State scored. There might have been, you know, a comeback on the cards. They really hampered down, and I think just the intensity is back there, and you know, I'm really like it's actually like fun to watch the defense play, which hasn't always been the case these past couple of years, especially under Pete Golding and his legendary defenses. That
we had a look back at that, you know, with his defense against LSU this week.
Giving up a lot, but it's nice to see them. Like they were swarming to the ball. You know, Mississippi State in that second half, pretty much once they had 17 points, it was all over.
And think of how much better the defense can be, because Deonte Lawson, you know, he was out this game. Mm-hmm. You know, he was still injured before he got hurt in the Ole Miss game. So once he gets back, I think it's going to really help, because you saw the biggest thing in this game was, you know, they were hitting some runs up the middle on us, and they were when they went to the backup quarterback, when they were doing more of a running quarterback style. I think Deonte Lawson, once he gets back, he can kind of help out with that part of the defense.
Yeah, that's true. I will say Mississippi State was doing some weird things. Third and long, they're running the ball straight up the middle. I mean, you're not going to see that very often. Definitely not what you would expect out of, you know, past Mississippi State teams. But overall, I was most impressed by the defense, right? You start out the game, you come out, that really tough environment. I think they went 3-and-out on the first drive. Forced to punt. They pin them inside the one, which, like, okay, honestly, hot take, Burnup and Reichert might be the, like, MVPs of this team so far. And honestly, you really, like, if you're going to make a super deep run, right, if you're going to be that, like, national championship caliber team, you need those things. They're the things that you don't really think about. But, like, Burnup was excellent on that drive and on the drive after that, pinned him inside, I think, inside the five,
you know,
on the second
one. You know, the one was at the one, and then there was another one where it was he almost got him again at the one, but it was just over the line when they tried to knock it back.
Yeah.
But, you know, special teams has been really big for this team. And then, speaking of, you know, the kickers, backup kicker gets in the game. I can't remember his name right now.
Connor, I think it's Connor Talty.
He gets in the game, you know, once it's, you know, late. Guy looks like he's going to run it back. Just perfect form tackle from the kicker. It was good to see.
It's beautiful. You love to see that.
Yeah.
Also, you know, this is – Alabama still had 6 penalties in this game, only 40 yards, but they did not have a touchdown called back because of a penalty. So that was good. You know, first time in like 3 weeks.
I mean, that's super impressive. One thing I also want to say is that, like, Milroe's decision making has just taken a, like, done a complete 180. Hey, I don't know that I've seen a quarterback grow this fast, like, ever. And I don't want to sit here and, like, you know, give too much credit, like, to this win, because I don't think Mississippi State's a very good team, right? But, I mean, Milroe's decision making, he made several decisions in the game that he wouldn't have made against Texas, or that he didn't make against Texas. Much smarter decisions with the ball. Not forcing things. He didn't throw any passes that were, like, nearly intercepted. He didn't have any close calls. Everything was super clean. And if you're, you know, that's part on the game plan, because, you know, you went from, they only threw 23 passes against Ole Miss. Now you threw 12. Maybe that's the game plan with them. It's a true, like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. If you can run the ball on them all day, you don't really need to change anything. But, you know, still, Milroe, even in those 12 passes, no bad decisions, no forced throws, no throws into double coverage, no throws that he shouldn't make. And maybe that's because they're making the decisions easier, but you still got to credit him for it.
Yeah, and I think to go along with that, he had a lot of plays where, you know, I think he could have really ran, but he actually kept his head up and made a couple of nice throws down the field that you know, obviously his probably real big highlight was that 53-yard run. But just, like, in general, he was able to kind of, I think, diagnose the defense, see who was open, and like you said, his maturity has skyrocketed since pretty much since that Texas game, and you know, it's been really good considering, you know, like, if you can only throw 12 passes and score 40 points, you're doing something right on offense, regardless of how it looks.
Yeah. So, Milroe, first start on the road first start on the road against an SEC team, Mississippi State. Doesn't get any easier. Next week on the road, Kyle Field, Texas A&M. Do you think it'll be tougher there for him, or do you think after being in that environment at Mississippi State that he can handle going into Kyle Field?
I think it's going to be tough. I don't want to spoil our next segment where we're going to like really go deep in on that, but I think it's going to be pretty tough. You couldn't ask for really two harder weeks back to back. One final thing before we go to break. Did this game, like, you know, seeing how Milroe's evolving, seeing how Tommy Rees is kind of adapting the offense further towards Milroe's game, how the defense is playing, all the pieces kind of coming together, and looking at that compared to everything we saw in college football this week, USC almost gives up a massive comeback, their defense non-existent, Georgia almost loses to Auburn, that would have been just comedic, Ole Miss taking down LSU. How far do we think this Alabama team can go? Have we kind of are things starting to look a little more optimistic?
I think they could like legitimately win the SEC championship. Like, I don't know what the record will be, because like there's a couple, like they could lose to, like, you know, like Tennessee could be, you know, could kind of be good. LSU is going to come into town. Obviously, A&M on the road's not easy. Alabama's lost that game, you know, that not that long ago, and still gone on to do a lot of good things. But it just seems like it's a relative down year for the SEC. Now, they still might finish with, you know, five ranked teams or whatever, and you know, a team in the playoff. But it doesn't seem like there's that real elite team. And I think if Alabama can get through the schedule and get to Atlanta, you got to think they've played, you know, they played Texas, played at Texas A&M, at Mississippi State, Tennessee, LSU. They would have gone to Auburn, to Kentucky. Like, they will be tested by the time that they play in probably Georgia. You know, probably Georgia. And if kind of you look on the flip side, you know, if it is Georgia, they haven't really been tested. Like, this was their first big test this weekend, and they beat Auburn by 7 and didn't look all that impressive. So I think Alabama could go as far as winning the SEC championship. You know, it's just, like I said, they could be like the 10-2 SEC champion, you know, and that wouldn't be all that surprising.
Yeah, I'm with Joe. You know, we think they could win the SEC, but we don't know how good the SEC as a whole is. Mm-hmm. Now, Georgia goes on the road to Auburn. Auburn has not looked good. This game they looked better, still not great. Georgia sneaks out with a win. Then you have, if you're going off the out-of-conference games, LSU losing to Florida State, and then you have all these other, you know, out-of-conference games where, like, I think the only win was Missouri against Kansas State, like on the actual like Power Five out of conference games.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, they won on a 61-yard field goal, and it's just like, is the SEC even like a top conference this year? You know, you see how teams are playing in the Pac-12, you see how they're playing in the Big Ten, and then the one game against an ACC opponent. We also had, you know, South Carolina lost to North Carolina, gave up, you know, like 9 sacks in that game. But, you know, when LSU played Florida State beat them by like 20. And then LSU blows out Mississippi State. And they're like, okay, LSU is good again. And then they give up 55 to Ole Miss, lose 55-49. Florida beats Tennessee. Then they go to Kentucky. Kentucky beats them like 33-14, I believe it was. So we don't really know how good these teams are, especially once we start facing out of comp. Like, if Alabama goes on, wins the SEC, gets to a playoff, and then all of a sudden they're playing Oregon or Ohio State, I don't know how they're going to fare in that game.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Okay, right. I'm very optimistic because it just seems like, you know, I think I had talked about this before about how, like, oh, well, you know, maybe, like, Colorado, everything was looking good for Colorado. And I said, if there was ever a year, it was going to be this year because, like, look at, you know, your traditional powerhouse is not doing as well. Like, the SEC is not very strong. And granted, the SEC might stink. Like, let's just be real about that. The Pac-12 probably is better than the SEC this year. I would not want to do that, like, head-to-head, like, conference battle, like, in basketball. But
I do think they're at least deeper this year.
Right. If I go down the top 10 on the AP poll, like, I really cannot find a team here that, like, scares me. right? Like, yeah. In a matchup. Georgia, like, they have looked weak against several teams this year, and they play a terrible schedule. So, you know, granted it is Georgia, but Michigan, pretty fraudulent when it comes to the playoff. Not super worried. Texas, their only really good win is against us. They put a lot of backups.
And only because of that fourth quarter.
Yeah. Very true. Ohio State, okay. Yeah. Florida State, definitely fraudulent. I do not think, like, at Florida State at 5, only because they're unbeaten, but they have had some very close calls. Boston College, Clemson, not the greatest. I think Oregon's really underranked at 8. Like, it's crazy how low they are. I think Oregon might be one of the best teams, like, in college football this year, honestly, in my opinion. And not just because I'm a semi-Bo Nix homer because of my take last year, but... USC, not scary. Notre Dame, never scary. I know we're running on the edge of the break, but man, like, even though this Alabama team has not looked great,
I will just say about Oregon, their next game will be in 2 weeks. They have the bye week. Their next game is at Washington, so that's when we're really going to see how good
that's going to be. Must watch.
That was about to be my point. Was like, when you look at it, like, no team scares us, really. I think that's fair to say, but like, if Alabama does get there and win, you know, let's say they get to the playoff, like, Oregon, Washington, USC are all good teams, but they're all going to, like, in some pattern, they're going to knock each other out. Like, only one of them really could get to, like, that four team playoff. And then you have, you know, Ohio State, Penn State are right there, and they're going to play each other. The loser of that is probably not getting in. Florida State, you know, has a pretty easy road after they just went on the road and kind of barely beat Clemson. And it's really weird. And then you got, obviously, Ohio State, Michigan that's going to play each other. Georgia's probably going to play whoever comes out of the West. Like, a lot of these teams are going to knock each other out. And as long as Alabama just keeps winning, there's a chance, there's an avenue that, you know, they could get into the playoff as, you know, a two or three seed and –
See, here's what's going to be interesting is if you get to the end of the season, it's time for the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, and they have, like, 2 1-loss Pac-12 teams. Then you have, like, say, Texas, undefeated or one loss. You know, we'll see what happens with that. But then if you have Ohio State win the Big Ten and also have Notre Dame win out, to where they're just one loss on that last play against Ohio State. And then it's like, do they put in 2 Pac-12 teams? Do they sneak Notre Dame in there? You know, what's going to happen? And then you got to think at least one SEC team's coming in, unless it's one of those, like, weird years where it's like a 3-loss champion. But
very interesting. And I will say that definitely, like, that – what is it? It's 10-team – 12-team playoff.
12.
Looking much, much better.
Yeah, this would, like, be, like, a really cool year to have it.
Like, we were already saying last year it would look pretty good. Now it's looking really good.
Although I will say, I believe if a 12-team playoff happened, like, right now, Alabama wouldn't be in it with the 6-6 model. Apparently, that's what I saw on – I believe it was The Athletic or someone. They do, like, if the 12-team model was today. Like, I think Alabama was, like, left out of it. And I don't know. That could also change because the AP poll just came out. I could be wrong, but I saw it. I believe it was late last night or something, where they were talking about the potential 12-team playoff. And because of that group of five conference champ and the wild cards, then I believe Alabama was not in, but it would be a great year, though, to have it either way.
Well, I mean,
Alabama would get in.
Yeah, they're saying that they wouldn't be in. Obviously, there's still going to be, like, some part of a selection process. And are they really going to put in, you know, 3 Pac-12 teams and then 3 Big Ten teams? And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Notre Dame sneaks in, and then they're like, no, Alabama, who's been dominant for so long, you're left out. I think they would put in another SEC team, but that's just me.
We'll see what happens. We could debate about this literally all day.
Yes.
When we come back, we're going to talk Alabama's next road test against Texas A&M at Kyle Field right here on 90.7 Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back in, everybody, here to the Low Tide on 90.7 The Capstone. Nick, Adam, Joe, talking Alabama football. And now we get to preview Texas A&M, Alabama. Really, like, the definitive road test, I think, for Alabama. Yes, Mississippi State was tough. All the cowbells, certainly an environment, but it is not the 100,000 people in Kyle Field environment. A very tough place to play.
Yeah, the yell.
This game, of course, this upcoming Saturday, 2:30 p.m. kick on CBS. Alabama opens as a 3.5-point favorite. The over-under is 50.
Well, they actually, I believe Alabama opened as a 7.5.
Well, and then it's already changed down. already to 3.5, so maybe they know something we don't.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, know. Big game nonetheless. Pretty much, if Alabama can get past A&M and be 3-0 in the West and have A&M as a loss, or A&M, they would have beat Ole Miss, they would have beat LSU's probably all that's left, and they already have one in conference loss, so it kind of sets Alabama up real nice in the division if they want to get to Atlanta.
See, a good thing for Alabama this year, you know, most of those tough games are at home. Now, I know they already lost to Texas at home. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that, you know, many times. But you have Texas A&M, then you're going to be back home for Arkansas, Tennessee, and LSU. Your only two road games after this are Kentucky and Auburn, which those are going to be tough. Mm-hmm. We all know how, you know, Jordan Hare, you know, the voodoo down there, you know, works. Almost took down number one Georgia this week, and Alabama has lost. They lost in 2017 down there, they, you know, the kick six 2013. Then you have the 2 years ago when it was double overtime, I believe it was, where Alabama did not score until less than a minute left in the game. So it'll be very interesting. But going into Kyle Field, last time they were there, they lost. If they're able to come away with a victory here, you know, that's just going to boost the confidence of everybody on that team, especially Jalen Milroe. And so far, Texas A&M is averaging 443 total yards, 283 passing yards. Now, a lot of those are from Connor Wegman, who is out for the season. So then you're thinking, okay, backup quarterback Max Johnson should be a little easier for Alabama. Well, the last time Alabama went into Kyle Field, they had to face a backup quarterback who was making his first start. Now Max Johnson is not going to be his first start, but, you know, Alabama lost that game. And, you know, so I'm not going to play into, oh, they're just playing a backup quarterback, they got it. You know, it's still going to be a tough game, tough environment. And it'll be interesting to see if Alabama's defense can play as well as they have the last couple weeks, especially on pass defense, because they had three interceptions in this pass game. Now, I know the first one was tipped on a screen pass. The second one was basically thrown right to Jihad Campbell. Caleb Downs made a good read on that late pass in the fourth quarter for his interception. But, you know, the passing defense has been playing really well this year, except for that fourth quarter, really, against Texas. And then, you know, we had a couple people that were hurt or coming back off of injury. You know, Caleb Downs apparently got sick during the game, and they were on the field a lot, and they were tired. Can the Alabama offense do enough to keep that defense rested and healthy to where they're able to shut down a passing attack that's averaging almost 300 yards a game?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Connor Wegman injury plays a big part in this game, but not as big of a part as you might think, because, like, let's be honest, Max Johnson, no scrub. He is technically a sophomore, but he's in his fourth year as a college football quarterback. You know, he was at LSU for quite some time. He already has – he's made starts against Arkansas, made a start against Alabama, and he doesn't really – A&M has a lot of playmakers, so they need him to just kind of be that game manager. I think, you know, a decent comparison for Johnson would be like a Mac Jones, right? Like somebody who's just, you know, maybe not like an elite talent, but, you know, not going to make big mistakes, a true game manager, and that might be all that they need.
Yeah. And in his one start with Texas A&M this year, 17 of 28, 210 yards, two touchdowns, did throw the one interception, but that's a pretty solid performance. I know that was a neutral site over at Jerry World, but it'll be interesting to see how he goes up against Alabama's defense. Also, unless Joe, if you were going to talk about this, I don't know.
Go
but,
for it.
You know, this is the first team that Jalen Milroe started against last year and turned
That's
the ball
true.
Over three times. How does he respond going into their place? Because, you know, we like to think, you know, it's a new team, new mindset, but is that still in the back of his mind of how, you know, poorly he played in that game?
Yeah, especially, I mean, with that game, yeah, with it being at home too, I don't know. But yeah, it is a pretty interesting game just because there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, A&M hasn't really – I mean, obviously that Arkansas has probably been the toughest team they've played and kind of hung around with A&M for a while. And, you know, it's just – I'm just a little – I want to see which, like, version of Texas A&M. We could probably also say the same thing about Alabama, just which version of these teams come because, you know, it wasn't – Week two of this season, you know, they went to Miami, A&M did, and got, like, absolutely whacked defensively. Miami put up 48 points and kind of boat raced them at the end. And, yeah, Tyler Van Dyke, I believe, had 5 touchdowns for the Hurricanes. So, you know, it's just, like, that was probably them at their worst. And they've rebounded, obviously, against, well, UL Monroe, Auburn, and Arkansas with – two of the games being at home and one being in Arlington. So, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see which version of them and at the same time, you know, which version of Alabama comes out because obviously, you know, Jalen Milroe, yesterday, he was really good last week. He was really good in the second half, but then obviously wasn't too great against Texas and has had his struggles for sure. Offensively, so you know, it's just I am wondering which version we're going to see and what and just how big of a factor that home field is, especially with Alabama traveling essentially road to road where they went from the cowbells to just the people.
And I will say that I think back-to-back weeks on the road actually helps them despite what, you know, most people think. It's, you know, awful to have to play back-to-back weeks on the road. It takes a lot out of you. But I think that that really tough environment in Starkville is actually going to have prepared them more for this game against A&M and, frankly, for a game that means a lot more, not only to Alabama's chances, but also probably to Jalen Milroe, honestly, coming out and having a revenge type game. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because in A&M's game against Auburn, they looked super flat when Wegman was in the game. After Wegman gets hurt, comes out, Johnson comes in, and he just, like, restarts the offense for some reason. And they obviously end up putting 27 up in that game. They put 34 up in their next game against Arkansas. So, clearly something's working. And if you're Alabama, you got to hope that their defense, which has been just touted as one of the best in the country, I think, certainly. You've got to hope that they can slow that down.
Yeah. I will say, too, just for a note, Max Johnson, obviously we said he played at LSU. That game, when he came to Tuscaloosa a couple of years ago, he was 16 of 32, two touchdowns and a pick, and wasn't all that great, but they really – obviously, LSU is a totally different team, but I think much like Texas A&M did, LSU ran the ball a lot. At the time, it was Terrion Davis-Price had 23 carries and 104 yards, and you know, so I think that's going to be just, you know, a little glimpse into what he did against Alabama. And Alabama does have some tape on him, and obviously held LSU to a pretty low point total that year. I would imagine A&M's going to be able to score more than 14, but just with the talent that they have. So, but yeah, it's just, you know, who knows really with these backup quarterbacks playing Alabama.
Yeah, true. Okay, fun question. Are you more worried about this game against A&M or Auburn?
Well, this is not a fun question at all.
Which one worries you more?
Honestly, like... Well, like, I don't want to say this now, but honestly, like, Auburn, because that's just that just boils up to like a big game at Jordan. Like Auburn, you know, I don't know what their record's going to be, but obviously it's going to be their biggest game regardless. But on the road, like that just terrifies me anyway. Like Alabama's obviously the last time when the Kyle Field they lost, but they've, you know, they've been in environments, and especially like you said, going from Davis Wade to College Station, maybe there isn't that huge of an adjustment noise wise. A lot less cowbells for sure, but yeah, I'm gonna say Auburn, but very you know, I don't want this to be clipped up.
Yeah, no cowbells, but they do have those yell leaders, so we'll see what happens. But you know, I'm looking at it, and Alabama and Texas A&M, they're the last two teams unbeaten in conference in the West. So the winner of this game does set themselves up, you know, pretty well. You know, Ole Miss beat LSU, so now LSU has the one loss. And you know, if Alabama wins this game tomorrow, I'm a little worried about this game, but the performance of the team from yesterday really, you know, kind of put me at ease a little bit. Now, if Alabama wins this game, and then they, you know, they're at that stage where, you know, they just have the one loss. Let's say they win out, and then all of a sudden they're going in to Jordan-Hare. They've already locked up the West. They're going to be in Atlanta. And then Auburn's coming in with, you know, Auburn Jesus, as people like to say. That's when I'm going to be worried about.
You know, all of a sudden, Reichert's trotting out for a 60-yard field goal, and you know, some dude standing right beneath the goalpost, and we're worried.
No, don't do that to me.
I mean, honestly, it's kind of funny because I think like Texas A&M and Auburn are very similar. Like, if you really think about it, both like play little brother to the bigger state school. Both agriculture-based. Some have called Auburn a cow college in the past, quote-unquote. I didn't say that, but, you know, it was said.
I've heard that from people.
Reports are saying people have said it.
Some people are saying that. Somebody said it.
It was Alabama Polytechnic Institute, I believe it was their name, back when they won their first championship back in, like, 1957. But that's...
I think, okay, but back to my, like, my take, right? I'm a little more worried. Don't let this get clipped. I'm a little more worried about the A&M game, right? Like, yes, I understand that Auburn game is going to have major stakes at the end of the year, especially if Alabama still only has the one loss. A loss against Auburn could, like, knock them out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And there is nothing that Auburn fans would love more than to cost Alabama a shot at the very end. Mm-hmm. That being said, I'm worried about this A&M game just because of A&M's recent successes against Alabama. Kyle Field is a very, very tough place to play. I'm very excited to really experience it for the first time. I'm interested to see if it really does live up to all the hype and, you know, what they show on TV. But, I mean... A&M would love nothing more than to already hand Alabama a second loss. So I'm a little more, like, you know, 51% more worried about A&M versus, like, 49% Auburn. But
yeah, there have been – and to be fair, what you're going saying there, Nick, like, there have been a lot of close calls between these two teams. Obviously, last year was 24-20 with Milroe starting. Year before, Alabama lost on the field goal. The COVID year, Alabama did kind of – steamroll them.
Now that A&M team was really good that year. That COVID year.
And it was a really good A&M
team.
Yeah,
they finished in the top season, I think they finished top five, and then they lost the bowl game when everybody sat out.
It gave everybody false hope.
You know, just looking back, like obviously they've played routinely now since A&M. You know, there have been a lot of, you know, 27-19 here in 2017. You know, it seems like Alabama, it's always kind of been tricky for them, regardless of where the game is and how good or bad either team is. A&M likes to hang around. And I think especially we saw it last year with Jimbo Fisher and kind of the whole summer of Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher essentially like passive-aggressive talking about each other and about transfer portal and stuff. And last year, I think it kind of destroyed A&M to lose that game to Alabama. So I like A&M, like you said, they'd love nothing more than to beat Alabama and potentially, you know, go try to get to Atlanta with that win.
Okay. I want to go a little bit further on my Auburn and A&M might be the same thing. take, okay? Both schools are cults, 100%. I think A&M's more of a cult than Auburn. I don't know. I can't really speak to that one as well. Both schools have controversial coaches / coaching staffs.
Oh, boy, is that true?
Okay. Both schools have very, like, the athletic department is very heavily ran by the Booster Club. And I'm trying to think of one other. Oh, and they both have like one legendary quarterback in their school's history and have struggled to find a quarterback since.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That is
so
true.
One last thing from me. So the last two games been, you know, very close. A&M 141-38, then Alabama 124-20. The last time you had two close games between the two schools, you had Texas A&M win 29-24 in Tuscaloosa. 2012, you know, Johnny Manziel breakout game, basically won the Heisman that week. And then you had 2013 where Alabama won 49-42. I knew, though, they had like a 42-14 lead in that game, and A&M came back and, you know, almost tied it late. The next week, or next year, 2014, was Blake Sims with an offense that, you know, looks very similar to how this one is run. And Alabama won 59-0. I am hoping Alabama can do that on the road. We'll see. I think it's going to be a little bit closer. But, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm trying here.
All right. Before we get a break, Alabama or A&M, how close is the game?
I'm going to say, like, it's, like, in between 10 and 14 points.
Alabama win?
Yeah, I do think Alabama will win. I think A&M losing Wegman is huge, especially with how good the defense has been playing. So I think Alabama will win. I think it'll be like 10 to 14 points. I'm really confused. Like, I'm just confused by the offense. I don't know if they're going to score 40 or 20 and really struggle. So
true.
That's why I'm going like a 10-point win, somewhere around there.
You know, I was kind of thinking the same thing. I was thinking, you know, about like 27-17. It's kind of hard to get a feel for it. You know, it's just, you know, I would like to say Alabama's offense scores more. I think they've started to figure some stuff out. But we did see, at least early in the game in Starkville, how there were still those communication issues, which we had actually kind of talked about, you know, the week prior on this show. And you saw the snap from McLaughlin when he just snapped it to Milroe, and Milroe was trying to give some extra signals. You know, I think, you know, early on you're going to see kind of that same thing. The offense kind of struggling to find its way, and then they're going to start scoring later. But I do think Texas A&M has a little bit better defense than Mississippi State does. So I just think Alabama's defense is too strong for A&M to come back and win this game.
Okay. So I think Alabama's going to win. I think it's going to be super close. I think it's going to be a one-touchdown game, maybe even a field goal game. I'm anticipating a very, very good game in that 2:30 slate.
Well, if it comes down to Will Riker kicking a field goal, I'm very comfortable.
I would be happy. If you told me right now we could skip to the very end of the game, there's like 2 seconds left on the clock, and it's like a 40-yard field goal for Riker to win the game, I'll take that any day of the week. Yeah. With that being said, I don't anticipate this being a very high-scoring game. I think it's going to be a defensive battle, which, you know, I think, like, field position, being able to flip a field on special teams is really going to come in handy. I think it's going to be a fantastic game. I worry about Milroe. Reason being, I think that A&M has seen the game plan of, they're trying to go more towards the run. They're trying to make it so the Milroe doesn't have to patch as much. I think A&M kind of locks down the run. They focus all their effort on locking down the run, and they force Milroe to throw the ball. And then I think, you know, Milroe probably, I would say, like a one interception night would probably be a good night for him. He throws one pick early, and they kind of, the crowd is in it the whole way, but I do think Alabama will pull it off. But I think it's going to be a very close one. I think it's going to be a great game. Anyway, when we come back, we'll be talking about all the other Alabama athletics, including the Ryder Cup and Justin Thompson's performance.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back in, everybody, here to the final couple of minutes here on the Low Tide on 90.7. Adam, Joe, Nick, talking Alabama athletics. First up, rough week for the U.S. at the Ryder Cup. Could not, I mean, just painful. Now, I can sit here and rant about this for forever. I won't for the interest of time. But I do have to give a bit of a shout out to Justin Thomas, because I think he was like one of the only bright points on the American team, besides like maybe Max Homa. Max Homa played pretty well, but JT, like, absolutely, I don't know if you guys watched, but had to put Jordan Spieth on his back, because Jordan just completely disappeared, looked like he forgot how to play golf at the end of their four ball. Let's see, I think he played, I'm trying to remember now. I think they played four ball both day, because I don't think they played foursomes. But, Jordan was abysmal. So, a good attempt from JT. I think the Americans just kind of fell flat. I mean, I don't know how you,
even the hats.
No hat discussion. There will be no hat gate on the Low Tide. Any of that ridiculousness. Also, like, golf drama is just hilarious to like anybody outside of it. But I think the American team just kind of fell flat, because I mean, when you have Scottie Scheffler, number one player in the world, and Brooks Koepka, who won a major this year, come out and they lose 9-7 Saturday morning, like, I mean, that's just unbelievable. You can't ask for that. They had several of their best players just play like complete trash. So better luck next year. And that environment, I'm warning everybody now, the environment when they come back to the U.S., I think it's at Bethpage this coming year. Or I think, what, it's in like 2 years, right? I think it'll be in 2025. When they come here, it is going to get nasty. Like, everybody thought that the whole, like, everybody waving their hats at Patrick Cantlay was bad. Just wait until you see what the Europeans are going to have to deal with when they come back here. Yeah. It's going to be nasty, but it's going to be fun.
That's one of the coolest things. Like, I'm not, like, a huge golf. I don't watch a lot of golf, admittedly. I follow it, but I really watch the Masters, and the Ryder Cup is something that I've always watched, because it is so cool, and especially when you have like that, I think, Europe versus U.S. dynamic, where people, like, I think, like, people just try harder. Like, some of the guys that are on like the U.S. team, where it's, you can tell that they're really going for it, they're really trying to kind of, especially when it's in when it's over in Europe, I think they try to kind of shut the crowd up, and for America, it's a very much like a, you know, nobody here wants us to win, so we're just going to try and win. And obviously, they were not good at all, or it was not a good weekend for them at all. And but it's fun to see, because it's just very different to what a lot of people think golf is. So, yeah.
So for me, you know, we'll go back to now the rest of the on-campus
no golf
stuff. Well, you know, I'm gonna be honest. I really wasn't paying attention to the Ryder Cup, so I'm not.
You know,
really
honestly, say it might be for the best.
It was I was real happy that like college football was happening, and there was like USC in the early games, and like there was always a big game that Twitter was talking about, because I didn't want to hear about the Ryder Cup. Yeah.
So for me, you know, I was paying attention to other stuff, you know, over the weekend. And then on Friday, we had Alabama soccer lose their second game of the season. It was also their second loss in the last three games. They had lost to Arkansas 5-0, and then they did get back on track a little bit. We were here when they beat Vanderbilt. You know, they won that game right before we went off the air. And then they played Kentucky on Friday on the road. Alabama fell 2-1. When the rankings came out Monday, you know, I said Sunday that they would probably drop a little bit because of that 5-0 loss to Arkansas. They actually stayed at number 9. I was very surprised that they did not drop at all. And then They played Kentucky. They lost 2-1. All three goals in this game came within 15 minutes of each other. Jordan Rose from Kentucky scored in the 60th minute. Then Nani Ramadan scored in the 70th minute with an assist from Jessica Skorka to tie up the game. And then 5 minutes later, Jordan Rhodes got another goal. And then Alabama was not able to get an equalizer the rest of the game. Second loss. It's already, you know, more than last year. Last year they only lost one game. Both losses have been on the road, so they still do have that unbeaten at home streak. I believe it's at 26 games. Their next game is this Thursday against Auburn. Last year, that was the last game of the regular season, and Alabama was undefeated in the SEC. They went down to the Plains, played Auburn. They won 1-0. A very competitive game. Auburn played some very good defense, basically just, you know, packed the box, weren't letting anything happen. And then Alabama finally broke through in the 87th minute when Riley Tanner scored off an assist from Cat Rogers. And I think it's going to be another very competitive game. You know, Alabama and Auburn, they are always, you know, any sport, it doesn't matter. Like, I know most people talk about the football, but, like, you go watch any sport, and it's always a very intense game, especially soccer. So if you haven't been to a soccer game or you haven't seen Alabama and Auburn play soccer against you, get there. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. For sure. Sounds like a blast. Yeah. I'll jump back to golf real quick. Alabama men's golf starting their second tournament of the year, I think. Maybe the third. I think. Yeah, second for sure. At the Hamptons Intercollegiate, they are the favorite in the field. I think they are ranked number 13. I think they're tied for 13th in the golf week, like the preseason poll with Virginia. But definitely a favorite in the field. Got a lot of the Ivy Leagues, Harvard, Howard, Penn, Princeton, Yale in the field. So, you know, go beat up on some Ivies this week.
Well, yeah, Howard isn't.
Well, really, okay.
But they produce a lot of the smart people, too.
Well, I mean, Alabama, you know, they say Harvard of the South, so.
You That's know? True.
Who says that?
You know, honestly, I don't we know. Do. The reports say it.
People are saying.
Of course. People are saying.
People have said it, for
Definitely
sure.
At least one person, like, ever, as in, like, me, I just said it. One other person surely has said that.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Anyway.
Law school is pretty good down here.
That is true. That is true. Very high-ranking law school. I don't know how we got off on this tangent. But,
go ahead. Talk about golf.
Obviously, you can follow the event on GolfStat. An interesting wrinkle this week. Auburn transfer, Austin Coggin, stepping into the starting lineup this week. So, could be interesting.
Well, a lot to watch for.
I believe he's a grad transfer. So.
Yeah. I'll get Nick off his golf tangent.
Duh. Come on.
We've been trying this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. We have collectively. But
I'll do a 3-hour show.
I'll go into a little bit, you know, smaller sports that I would imagine a couple people missed. I'll do cross country and swimming. Both happened Friday while the soccer team was still going on. Or I guess actually before the soccer team was going on in case of running. Cross country went into their third meet of the year, the Joe Payne Invitational in South Bend, Indiana, on Notre Dame. Started at 9:30 Central Time for the women, 10:15 a.m. Central Time for the men, and it was a pretty solid showing. Both teams finished third, which is where they've essentially finished for the most part for all their meets. The women were led by freshman. Doris, and then I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Lemgul. She finished first. Her second individual title for the freshman in just her three meets of her career. So she ran really well, had a 16:05 minute mark. She finished second, or first, excuse me. Hilda Olmiomi, I butchered that, so I am sorry there. She finished 8th, Joey Gill with 11th, and that kind of rounded out the top 20 for the women's team. On the men's team, also finished 3rd. They had a 2-3 finish. Hillary Sherriot finished 2nd in the men's I should say men ran 5 miles. Women did a 5K, which is 3 miles. But Hillary Shurioit finished 23:10, and Victor Kiprup finished number 3 in the event with 23:12, so essentially neck and neck there by a couple seconds. But overall, yeah, really good weekend for the Crimson Tide. They're back in action, not this weekend, but next weekend here in Tuscaloosa at the Crimson Classic at the Harry Pritchett Running Park. Starts at 8:30 a.m. for the men, so grab a cup of coffee.
Do you have an update over there?
Yeah, I do. I cannot find their full schedule because it looks like they haven't been updating it online. But Alabama men's hockey today, or I believe this was yesterday. Yes, this would have been yesterday. Took the loss to Oklahoma 5-2. We support club sports here on the Low Tide.
Are they still club? I think didn't they recently?
It's not NCAA. It's okay. So technically,
they are Division I ACHA.
Okay.
American Collegiate Hockey Association, I think. Their next game is against, let me see here, Westchester University in Westchester. They've got 2 games on October 6th and 7th, and then they'll be back home to take on Wake Forest on the 12th and 13th.
Yeah, in Pelham.
Yeah.
That's
at
home.
And so we have Alabama Rowing. You know, they had their first competition on September 30th. It was the head of the Oklahoma competition, and they had 6 top 5 finishes. So, you know, good for them. Also, I do want to point out that we do have a men's tennis player who will be going to the ITA All-American Championships on Monday, Philip Planinsek. He is the 47th-ranked tennis player in the nation, and he will face in the opening round Harvard's Cooper Williams. So I guess we will see, you know, if Alabama really is the Harvard of the South.
Harvard versus Harvard of the South. This is what we love to see.
Crimson versus the Crimson Tide. That's what's up. I'll say real quick, I don't know if I mentioned, I'll mention swimming real quick. They started their season off on Friday against Delta State here in Tuscaloosa. Both men's and women's won. It was a really good event. I mean, there's a lot of stuff happened. So there's, you know, the women relay with Jada Scott, Avery Wiseman, Cadence Vincent, and Caitlin Winter. Swept that, and the 200-meter relay as well. And on the men's side of it, Gavin Lilly won the men's 100-meter backstroke. Trey Shells won the 100-meter breaststroke. And, they swept Delta State pretty handedly. Their next meet is October 20th, which is a couple Fridays from now, against Missouri. Home still against in Tuscaloosa.
How many students do you think attend Delta State?
Where is Delta State?
No cheating.
Sorry, can you tell me?
Let's see. Cleveland, Mississippi.
Okay. I'm going to say
10,000.
I'm going to go like 3,000.
2,500.
Okay.
Wow.
And 56.
You know, I kind of wanted to go a little lower, but then I was thinking, you know, a smaller school and cheaper, you know, maybe, you know, more people are able to afford it, which is probably true, but I don't know.
And do you know about the mascot?
No.
The Fighting Okra.
Oh,
I'm not joking.
That's so
look
sick.
It up. It's you okra know, with boxing so cool. gloves.
I don't know if I like sick. That one better than I think it's Scottsdale. They're the Fighting Artichokes. I've seen that one before. They're a community college though. But it, also,
oh my gosh. Yeah, it really is just okra with boxing gloves.
It's good. Truly elite. Look that
also,
one up.
There's a school in California. I forgot where. They're like the Banana Slugs. Very cool mascot. Very underrated. If you know how like slugs, not that dangerous to humans, but the Banana Slug in the slug world, that's a big deal for them.
Very exciting. They have and they're an aviation school. Did you know that?
Yeah.
They're the only school in Mississippi that offers a degree in commercial aviation. They got 19 planes.
Is that like what they're known for? Like is that like
you know,
people go there?
It was a big part on their Wikipedia page. But truly, you can tell we've hit the bottom of the barrel for content. We are doing a deep dive on Delta State.
Good stuff.
But that's the kind of things that we do here on the Low Tide on 90.7.
Yeah. We talk about anything.
Same time next week, 7 to 8 every Sunday here on the Low Tide. Nick, Adam, Joe, we'll see you next week.